Right, okay, Joe, welcome to the John Covey podcast. This is episode 85. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you.
Absolutely beautiful. So, Joe Outram, is that the right way of saying it?
That is the right way of saying it.
Fantastic. So, Joe, you are a, let me get this right, you're a financial fitness instructor.
Yes, that was just a term I made up for myself, but yeah.
I love it. What does it mean?
Basically, it's bringing in a combination of things around dealing with your finances. So in the past, because I had an accountancy practice, was a chartered accountant, so I'm bringing in some of the business finance stuff. I've also qualified IFA in the past, so I know the importance of getting the personal finances sorted. But I also know often about 80% of dealing with your money is mindset. I'm a certified mindset coach, so it kind of financial fitness just brings to me, just brings everything together. It's about getting into the right shape to go out and do what you need to do.
Got you. And what is a financial? What did you say it was called? A mindset fitness coach.
Well, I'm a certified mindset coach.
Right.
Yeah.
And what is that? What's a mindset coach?
Well, I qualified with the Mindset Coach Academy. So we did a multitude of things, all working around mindset. So positive psychology, certificates in NLP, hypnosis, timeline therapy, all those things, different tools that you can help people to understand how they think and ultimately change how they're thinking about something.
Got you. What's your favourite out of all them techniques?
Timeline therapy.
Really?
It's hands down just for changing limiting beliefs. Yeah.
Can you give me an example? Like, what's a good example of that?
Well, basically, with timeline therapy, we're taking people back, not in hypnosis, it's just an active visualization technique.
Yeah.
We're just going to take them back to that point that they made the decision to have that belief.
Sure. How do you identify where that point is?
The unconscious mind knows where it is. So we have scripts that have been tested over the years that have come from NLP and wording we use. And we do stick to the script because it's very precise. Just ask the unconscious mind to be going back to that point when you made the decision.
Sure.
Have that belief. And what else could it learn? Mm. And, you know, people come up with all these weird and wonderful learnings. They just don't know where they're coming from because, of course, it's the unconscious mind. And then moving forward, you've no longer got that limiting belief restricting you. Of course, it depends then what you do with it. But once you flip it, then you've got no limitations on what you go and do with your business. So, and I think for me, as having been a chartered accountant for 20 odd years, nobody had a smile on their face when I handed them a set of accounts. Said, yeah, Joe, that's great. That's the best set of accounts I've ever had.
Yeah.
Get that kind of response. Yeah. But you can see it on people's faces when they realise they're no longer hanging on to stuff that's been plaguing their mind. They try and search for it. They can't find it.
Yes.
Because the system, look on people.
Yeah, the system's designed to keep you safe, so it doesn't want you to go in interrupting.
Yeah. So for me, that's partly why I like it, because of that instant feedback. You can just see it on people's faces.
Of course.
Yeah. But also then when they're coming back 2 or 3 months later, in fact, I'm seeing them on social media, and you can see that, you know, it could even be, I had a friend who was ready to cancel her 50th birthday party. She had this fear of standing up in front of people.
Right.
She didn't want to be the center of attention. So we got rid of that belief. And then she had a whale of a time on her 50th. Including standing in the middle of the room talking to 80 family and friends.
Absolutely wonderful. So it's not just finances that you can help people with then. It's getting out of their own way completely.
Yeah, I could do everything. Obviously, I just market around money. But ultimately, a lot of money issues tend to be mixed in with self-love and business success. So there's a whole host we end up clearing anyway.
Right.
But yeah, you can technique to clear anything that's limiting you.
That's incredible. Yeah. Must be very rewarding for you when you actually do see that breakthrough.
Yeah, I think when I'm taking people through the process, And start the process, we go back and check that you can't find that feeling that you used to get when you had that thought.
Yeah.
We're just going back and you just can't, you know, you can see the look on the face that they're really searching.
Yes.
For that thought, can't find it. And that look of confusion has to say, where's it gone? Actually, what was that? What was it that I was looking for? And it's like, yeah, that's just... So rewarding.
When you do take them back and then you find what this root cause of issues is, this problem, like, what do you do with it? I mean, do you delete it? Do you reprogram it? Do you make them think about it differently? I mean, you've just said that they can't find it no more, so...
Yeah, what you're doing in timeline therapy is asking the unconscious mind to just look at that event. What could it learn? What are the positive learnings from it?
Of course.
Most of these, I mean, some can, but you can bring some forward from before birth, part of your DNA. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are in the imprint year, so 0 to 7.
Yep.
So when you've made decisions in 0 to 7, I don't know about you, but I won't trust my 5-6-year-old self to be making decisions. But that's what we're basing stuff on. Sure. The decision making of a 5, you know, potentially your 5-year-old self. Mm. So look through, you know, I suppose your adult eyes, the unconscious mind, just looking at it objectively, because it's no longer in that moment, in the event, it can look at it quite objectively and work out, well, what were the positive things I needed to learn? And once your unconscious mind knows the positive things that you're meant to learn, it no longer has the limiting belief, because it's learned something new that's been, like you said earlier, it's for your protection. At that point, it knows something better.
Yep.
So the belief just disappears.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
absolutely wonderful. So you've kind of you've narrowed in on the financial side of this to help people really on the finances. On your LinkedIn profile, it says you're predominantly helping female entrepreneurs to remove that financial block. So yeah. I mean, are you working purely just with women, or do you help guys as well?
Yeah, help guys as well, obviously. And you'll know this more than anything. You've got to home in on your marketing. So I think I've always homed in on women with business, because from the practical side, and even the money mindset, I think we have a whole different set of issues.
Yeah.
Around money. A lot of my clients typically that are women, they've raised a family, they've been in a job, and now they're going into a period of self-employment, and it's all completely new to them. So that's why I've, you know, chosen that as a niche. But yeah, it certainly works. And I do have a few male clients. Yeah.
Do you find that women are more open to these ideas than men? Do you think men retaliate against it harder than women?
I think so. Yeah, I think, again, because it comes down to emotions, and it comes down to talking about emotions at the end of the day when you're talking about mindset, particularly around money, because it's an emotional topic. You have a relationship with money. I know it's just like a series of numbers on a bank account electronically, or, you know, it's paper and a message. At the end of the day, we do have a very emotional relationship with it.
I mean, the amount of people, predominantly men, who I know, when I've told them to go and look at the credit report and the credit file, are absolutely petrified to go and look at the credit score and the credit file for some reason. You know, they're absolutely scared to death of it.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I think it comes down to fear. I think it's that fear of it's not going to be as good as I think, or all that. I think it's about having clarity. People actually do know. It's like, with a bank account, they don't want to look at the bank account balance because they think they know what it's going to say, or they think they know.
Yeah.
Or they don't want to know the bad news.
There we go.
Avoiding it is going to help them. But actually, your unconscious mind, if you know that it's going to be bad, you might as well give it the exact figures.
Sure.
Now, I think it comes down to fear. And I think for a lot of people, we do adopt a strategy of burying our head in the sand, which isn't a very good financial strategy, but it's one that a lot of people adopt.
Why do they do that?
I think it's because we're just not used to talking about money. Right. I don't know about you, but I certainly, my parents never spoke to me about money. You know, I was never sat down. We weren't sat down at school and explained how money worked. And in fact, we were brought up, a lot of us were brought up with that, oh, we don't talk about money. It's not a subject you talk about. It's rude to talk about money. So we have this thing that it's this weird and wonderful thing that's just one side and we shouldn't openly discuss it or think about it. And we're also taught as well, sometimes by society, we pick it up when we're kids, that, you know, being wealthy, sometimes it's not the best thing. Mm. You know, people aren't very nice, that yeah. kind of thing. And it's yeah. all feeds into it. You know, so I think we're almost trained to push it to one side, money, and ignore it.
Of course. I'm going to do a social experiment. Once we are allowed to go back outside into the public, I'm going to film this and I'm going to go out to people, to strangers, to random people, and I'm going to ask them to continue the statement, and I'm going to say to them, money doesn't, and I guarantee they'll say, grow on trees.
Grow on trees,
yeah. And the love of money is the
root of all evil.
Root of all evil. And do you know, I guarantee if we go into the public and ask these people these questions, they'll know the phrases, they'll know the sayings. Yeah. And I think that absolutely reinforces everything that you're saying right there about how we've been conditioned to think about money.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, you get people picking up other things from the kids. It's not just the sayings like that, which we've all heard and repeated, because I know I will have said them in the past. But it's also what we've overheard, you know, like people where their parents have maybe argued about money, or and they just picked up on things like that. That you get an awful lot. I see an awful lot about where they've had, you know, parents that have argued.
Of course. So Joe, so you're not only just a financial fitness instructor, you have had 21 years as an accountant and a business coach as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
So I started off in accountancy. Originally I wanted to work in a bank, but I went through the, you know, A levels, university, and really liked accountancy. I like to be able, I'm kind of an introvert, so the idea of being locked in a room with a spreadsheet and working out lots of numbers is perfect. So it was a perfect career for me. And I was one of the youngest at the time. I've probably been surpassed now, but it was back in 1998, I became a partner in a firm. And I think it was the youngest female partner in a firm of chartered accountants. For one reason or another, that lasted about 6 months and I ended up on my own. And then it just took it from there. And I've always had, I think, an entrepreneurial side to me. So I've always wanted to try new things, do things that are different. And I went to a conference once that was for accountants, but not about accountancy. It was about all the stuff you could do with your practice. And it was about, you know, business development and all the other services you could offer for your clients. And I think there was probably about half a dozen women in the room. And I thought, you know what, I want to be up there on stage next year as a guest, saying the wonderful things we could do. And, you know, the law of attraction kicks in. It happened, and I was on that stage for the next 3 or 4 years. Because I just wanted to change accountancy and just not do just the number stuff and help businesses, giving business advice. So that's how I got into the whole strategic planning, business advice. Yeah. Ended up doing it for accountants, which I was lucky enough to travel to the US and Australia for that, because accountants, believe it or not, they are the same the world over.
No matter where you go, they're always the same. Yeah.
They're always the same kind of personalities. Yeah. So,
yeah. Do you think it's coming out of the dark ages as a profession? Do you think it still is a dusty profession, or are they becoming more modernized, do you think?
I think they're becoming more modernized. I think it's been a slow process, but I think it's like everything, you've got to adapt.
Yeah.
It's the, and it's I certainly see now.
Survive, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I see now, I see lots of accountants, which I know from the kind of things that I put on social media, and, you know, whether it's Facebook, LinkedIn or wherever, and you're thinking, well, you know, 10 years ago, they wouldn't have been posting that. Thing they wouldn't have been, you know, standing and, you know, putting their hand up and saying, this is me and I do things differently. So that's great to see from, you know, as a profession. I think my problem was, I think I was probably 10 years too soon. And I think that's where I got bored and why I ultimately left the profession. But yeah.
Sure. So in terms of like helping people then? So from your experience in the accounts and the business support, and you've just said like strategic planning and things, like what can businesses do, or what should they be doing right now? Forget about the crisis, what we're going through at the moment, but let's just imagine like that's not really an issue. What should businesses be doing, what they're not doing?
It should just be taking, going back to basics. All when it comes to money, it's always about basics. And you did mention it earlier, where people not looking at credit files. You know, I know that's personal finances, but even with business finances, there are many people who don't look at their financials. They're not doing things monthly. They're not keeping up to date. And it won't matter what size business you are. You need to have that handle on what's happening in your business. Your numbers can tell you so much. And you don't necessarily have to do it yourself, you know, and you can employ people. There are accountants out there that are willing to take all that processing side off you. Okay. But ultimately, you then need to look at the figures. And I think a lot of people, I think this is where it becomes disappointing sometimes for accountants, that you go and you produce this information, whether it's annually or monthly or quarterly, and clients don't want to understand what you're telling them. I think that it's music to an accountant's ears when the client says, can you just explain this? What does this actually mean? Because at that point, it becomes interesting for the accountant, but you know your client's invested in their business. Yes. They're trying to understand.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I can understand it looks daunting. You look at a profit and loss account, you look at a balance sheet, and you think, well, it's just a bunch of numbers.
Yeah.
Potentially. But once you start looking at them on a routine basis, it becomes quite easy to understand, well, yeah, I understand why that's changed because X, Y, and Z, or I need to change there. So I think that's what businesses need to be doing more of, is keeping their information up to date. And they can do that now with all these online accountancy packages. They can communicate quite easily with their accountant. They don't even have to go in and see their accountant. But then to actually start to understand what those figures are telling them.
Of course.
And going down to basics, like making sure they're checking on the bank accounts every day, just so that they know what's happening.
Of course, of course. Do you think that the businesses should be looking at raising the credit line as like before they ever need it? Or do you think they should try and self-fund as long as possible?
It kind of depend. Just kind of depend on the business. I would always err on the side of caution and go with just being as creative as you can be in your business without having to need to raise the funds. Because I think the problem, if we learn one thing about the past with the financial crash, was that as businesses, it was just so easy to say, "Well, let's take some credit. Yeah. Let's do it on credit," and it took away our creativity. And a lot of people had credit.
Yeah.
I was probably one of those people as well.
Right.
Had credit because it was there and it was available and it was the done thing.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to think about your business as much. Right. So I do think it helps. You do everything that you can do, then you go for credit.
Yeah, sure. It makes total sense. In terms of the situation that we're in right now.
Yeah.
Like, what would you be telling businesses to do right now?
Right now, it's about cutting costs where possible in a lot of ways, and putting a lot of things on hold wherever they can. It's the same business finances or personal finances, I think. It's the same scenario. Look at, well, what am I paying out in my business that I don't have to pay out?
Yeah, absolutely. I
have so many things on repeat that are coming out direct debit month on month, and perhaps we don't need them.
No, and the thing is, do you know what, Joe? I did this myself, and like one of the things exercise that I get my clients to do is every 8 to 12 weeks I get them to look at the costs. I call it maximizing and optimizing, and so it's looking at like, can they increase their costs in some place by adding more value, and can they reduce what they're paying somewhere?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're all a work in progress, aren't we? And so I decided, actually, I need to look at mine. I've not done mine for a while. And again, you know, I've shaved £100 a month off of the business expenses for stuff that's kind of nice to have, but not necessarily needed. So we all do this, I think. I think it's important that we
do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, periodically look at mine. Yeah, probably that, yeah, so that 2 to 3 month period, because when you look at it, you know, now it could be that, well, yeah, some of those subscriptions I'm using, I'm getting value of, I need, but in 3 months time that might not be the case.
True.
So yeah, we do need to keep a close eye on it. Yeah,
sure. So in terms of the kind of businesses that you're facing, the money blocks that they have, are they all coming from a similar place? Are the money blocks all more or less the same, or has everybody got something completely different?
There are some common themes. Worthiness, that's a big one. I think it's a big one for women in particular. That can come in all sorts, but if you were to sum it up, it was like they don't feel worthy of being wealthy. And sometimes that for women, that's they don't want to be earning more than their husbands. All of a sudden, that kind of puts a glass ceiling in there.
Okay.
More than parents even. And sometimes it's like when they've had a job, left the job, and it's crazy, they get up to what they were earning in their job, and then that becomes a block.
Right.
It's like, that's where my value was, because that's what I was earning before.
Of course.
But again, it's around worthiness. I don't feel I'm not enough, that kind of thing. That's the real big one.
Yeah. I mean, I completely understand. I've had many conversations with people over the years. I remember, I often tell a story about this, actually. So there's a guy that I knew from the local pub that I used to drink in several years ago, and he lost his job. He got made redundant. He was a car mechanic, but he was like the top level. He was the head of the shop, and he lost his job. And he were complaining that there's no jobs available at the moment. And I said, well, let's have a look at the paper. Let's see what's going on. And we looked, and Chrysler was just opening one of their new showrooms in Sheffield at the time. And I said, here you go. This, it's not the same title, but it sounds exactly the same as what you do. And he looked at it, and the first thing he looked at was the salary. But prior to this, he was used to earning maybe 35 grand, 40 grand a year. He looked at the salary was 70.
Yeah.
You know the answer, what he's going to say to me, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. I can't
apply for that.
Yeah.
I'm not skilled enough for that. I can't do that.
Yeah.
So, but I encouraged him to push for the role. And actually, guess what?
Yeah, got the job.
He got the job. And yeah. I think that happens all the time, doesn't it, Joe?
It does. We think, and I see that in people's pricing. In fact, I'm seeing that a lot now. People are just devalue what they're worth and think they can only charge X amount. We're seeing that all the time. And of course, then the big mindset thing is, I've got to work hard for my money.
Oh, yes. That's
another really big,
That's a trap that we've been taught, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think a lot of us have. Yeah, your dad's, you know, he's working long hours because we need to earn, you know, the money. Mm. Yeah, I got told that my dad worked away a lot. So it's like, he's working away so we can have the better things in life, which I suppose is quite positive for a mum to say to a kid. But in my mind, that was, you need to work hard for a living.
And I think that it's probably quite tricky, isn't it? Because you don't want people to become lazy from an early age. Like, if you're drilling into them at an early age, listen, you need to work hard, you've got to be a hard worker and graft hard, but at the same time, you've got to make sure that the message that they're connecting to, that the meaning that they're giving that is the right meaning. And I think that's a real problem, isn't it? The meaning.
It's their interpretation of what that means, and it's not always a logical one, because it's in a young person's mind, it's not logical.
Of course.
And of course, you do have to work hard. I see this a lot. I have a lot of clients who are very much vested into the law of attraction. And I think, oh, you know, you can just ask for stuff and it'll arrive. And I'm like, no, there's still work to be done. You're still going to go out there and do the work. Yeah. Exactly. And I think you've got to work. You've just got to work smart.
Yeah, I agree.
Work hard. And diligently, but not working yourself into the ground, which is what a lot of us end up doing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big fan of the law of attraction. I really do like the law of attraction, but I think that the clue to the law of attraction lies in the last 6 letters of the word attraction, which is action. You know, you've got to go and do something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it. Things, you know, occasionally things unexpectedly come through the door. But yeah, most of the time it comes in the form of opportunities that require a bit of work.
And we've got a great opportunity what's happening all around us right now. Do you know, in terms of when there's chaos and crisis, opportunities are many. And I think that, was it Tony Robbins who said, we get rewarded in public for the things we practice in private?
I think it was.
And I think today, yesterday, this lockdown procedure, everything that's happening right now, this has given us a fantastic opportunity to practice in private.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this time is really, it's really going to bring forward some really good entrepreneurs because it's making people think.
I agree.
And that's all part of that work smarter thing, isn't it?
It is.
Because you've got to adapt. Yeah.
Do you think, Joe, do you think you can work smarter before you've worked harder though? Do you think you have to work hard first to learn where you can then work smarter?
Not necessarily. I think whenever you're starting something new, it's about, so this can be very new in your career. And I think I do see that in a lot of the youngsters that are coming through. They're instantly working the easiest way to get the results. And that probably comes from a generation of laziness. It works, and there is a happy medium somewhere, yeah.
I think it was a quote from Bill Gates who said, if you want something doing the quickest, he finds a lazy person because they'll find the easiest way and quickest way of doing it.
Yeah. Whereas my generation has always found the most difficult way to do stuff.
Because we like the challenge.
Exactly. And that was certainly the way that I did things. If there was a hard way, I was going to find it.
Why do you think that is? Like, why? What is it?
I think that comes back to that limiting belief that I had, don't have now, but had, that you needed to work hard. If you want something different in life, you've got to do something exceptional. And that exceptional meant working harder than other people were working.
Mm. Yeah. Whereas the real reality of that is to work harder on yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is part of the working smarter. Yeah. Understanding yourself more, yeah.
Totally. So in terms of like yourself, like you just said there that you had a major breakthrough for yourself, which was the limiting belief side. Do you know, like what kind of led to that? Do you know, what was the thing that steered you to it and thought, you know what, I'm sick of this, I need to change, let's go.
My story is, despite being a chartered accountant and a financial advisor, I did get to the position where it was almost financial ruin. I always say, me and money, we nearly got divorced. Mm-hmm. It was pretty serious because I'd ignored all warning signs and I should have known better.
Right.
I didn't go bankrupt or anything. I paid off, you know, my creditors, but I got to the position where I couldn't carry on. Mm. Financial position had got that bad. And I'm talking around the time of the property crash.
Yeah.
Can't blame that because if I'd have saved as well as some investing, and I have in the past bought properties that I've not even seen.
Yeah.
Crazy. I had a lot of lessons to learn. I would have got too many plates spinning. Yeah. And it got to the position where I had no choice. It was like, you go bankrupt or you sort this out yourself. And for me, I can sort it out myself. I've got the qualifications. I should know what to do. But also I started to beat myself up a little bit because I should have known better. And I think that was the start of the journey of, well, actually there is more to money than just counting it and organizing it and spending it. And that's where I got into the money mindset stuff. And previously I'd been into the law of attraction, but never really understood a lot of that. So that's where some of my first mindset stuff came from.
Got you.
Type stuff, but I knew I had to, if I wasn't going to get myself into the same position, I knew I had to do something different, because of course that is the problem. We go through life on automatic and we just keep repeating the same things over again until you stop and make a difference. And that's when I really started my personal development journey on financial stuff and how I thought about money and finances. And once I changed that, then that just came, you know, it became so much easier to then get out of debt and get on a solid footing. So yeah, that's, so I have been through that personal journey of having mega amounts of personal debt to get rid of.
So, I mean, so just so I've got this right for everyone else that's listening. So you knew what to do. You got all the right information available to you, but you still couldn't take the action to change that because the mindset was holding you back.
Yeah.
That's powerful, Joe, isn't it? To understand that and to actually break through that. That's incredibly powerful.
It is, even so now, it's like, I don't have credit now. So, you know, my car's paid for in cash. I partner on the property, no mortgage. To me now, I've got to the stage where I can't even have, I mean, I've got an overdraft facility, but the thought of going, if I went into that, it's like, because it gets, not from a fear point of view, it's just, I know it's not good practice. And to me, it's saying to myself, you're not managing this very well. You've not been doing something correct. So, it is huge. How you think about money has a real serious impact.
Yes. But I mean, debt's not necessarily a bad thing, though, is it? Manage debt's good, isn't it?
Yeah, manage debt's good. But if you were buying, say, for example, you were investing in properties because you're renting them out, you're going to get debt. Personal debt. It's different. I mean, we've been taught to live beyond our means, basically. Society taught us that. No 0% credit, pay for this, everything. I mean, I've had people, you know, salespeople look at me gone out when I said, no, I want to pay cash for that. I want to be paying for my sofa monthly. Cash. And it's that, because we have been taught, and everybody kind of just says, yes, let me just sign for it, take it out of the showroom without paying any money. And that huge impact on how you think about money.
Of course, majorly. And I think that there's three areas that I often talk about with people when I discuss money. I mean, I'm not a mindset coach around money or anything like that, but I think that what I've said to people over the years is that money is just a habit. And you fall into three categories of habits with money. And the first habit is that you're in the habit of spending more than you earn. You know, so if you earn £40,000 a year, and you're in the habit of earning, of spending £50,000 a year, earning more money is never going to change that, because if you earn 50, you'll spend 60. You know, nothing changes.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had people come to me and say, "Now I don't earn more than I spend." I said, "We've got credit card debt."
Yeah. Huh?
Rephrase. How did that happen then?
Exactly. Yeah. And I we see it all the time, and I think that probably a large proportion of the UK, maybe even the world, I'd say, maybe 60-70% of them are spending themselves in that first habit category where they're spending more than they earn. And they often say, well, if I could just earn some more money, everything will be fine. And it's like, no, it won't, because you'll spend more money as well. It doesn't work.
Exactly.
The second habit that I often say to people is that if you're not in the habit of spending more than you earn, you're in the habit of spending everything you earn. So if you earn 40, you spend 40. You know, every month you're just breaking even. And again, if you earn more money, nothing's going to change. You know, you earn 45,000, you'll spend 45,000. It's just a habit. And then the third habit is you save money, so you earn more than you spend. And again, that's just a learned behavior. You know, if you like, as I'm probably aware that what you probably do with people is help them to get in that healthy habit of saving money. Then even if you've not got money, you start to make it a habit, you'll find a way to save it.
Exactly. And I get a lot of people saving immediately. It's one of the first things I get them to do, even if it's just £10 a month. You need to get into the habit of an automatic amount going out into a savings account.
Yeah.
And then you just increase it. You know, work out what you can afford now. Yeah. 3 months later, you increase that by 10%.
Yeah.
3 months later, you increase it by 10%. And you'll just find that you just can, because at that point, you can then, you'll find the money because you're used to saving.
And I often, I mean, I had a conversation with one of my clients probably a year ago, actually. They were looking at wanting to save some money for a deposit. And they were saying, well, at the minute, we've not really got enough money coming in to save. So I says, well, let's look at your business then. Like, how many transactions do you do every single day? Payment transactions. He's like, well, maybe 30 transactions a day. I says, okay, so from every transaction that you get, take 10% of that money out straight away and put it to one side. Mm-hmm. Like, well, that's easy enough, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely, that's easy enough. I says, and here's a better way of doing it. Increase your fees by 10% as well. So then actually, you're not any better, you're not any worse off, you're just a lot better off. Do it over and over and over again, end of the year, there's your 20 grand, you've got a deposit.
Yeah, and I think just to make things, like I said earlier, it's quite an emotional subject, money. The more you can take emotion out of the equation, the easier it becomes. So just work out percentages-wise that you're going to transfer.
Sure.
So the simple system that I use, and it is quite a simple system because I've got not got debt to repay. In my business, what money's come in that week, I know I could take 75% of that out of my business. The other 25% will cover my basic expenses and my tax.
Yeah.
I take 75% out. That comes into an income account for me personally. Then that gets divided up.
Yeah.
40% is going into savings. 60% is going into, it's about 35%, 35% into savings accounts.
Yeah.
But it's pensions, normal savings, investments, whatever.
Yep.
The rest goes into an expenses account. Right. And I only carry the debit card for the expenses account.
I like it, yeah.
I've broke it down into percentages, and it's different percentages for different people.
Sure.
But once you start taking out that emotion out of what you're doing with your money, and then very much like the people in particular that spend whatever they earn, you're only putting 65% into your expenses account. That's all you'll spend because that's all that's there.
Of course, that's all that's there, yeah. Yeah. And it is amazing, isn't it, that how that money just gets tied up into everything else. If you don't move it out of there and get it somewhere else, it will just get consumed by whatever else is happening in that account.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things I do with people who can't manage money well is to get them to have several bank accounts.
Yeah, yeah.
A different thing. Yeah. It comes back to that old thing, the way my grandmother would have done it would be putting cash in different envelopes.
Yeah. Under the mattress.
Basics at the end of the day, but, we don't think of money in terms of, well, what can I spend? What's available? What do I need for? Because people don't budget as well.
No,
they're in business.
No. And I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Is like you've just said earlier on, everything's so easily accessible and available to people. You don't have to save for anything no more. If you can't afford it, you just get it on tap. And I think there's a certain things that you should probably do if you want to do, as long as you've got it under control. Don't overstretch yourself. Make sure that you've actually calculated your numbers. And like cars, for example. So if you want to get a car on finance, they're an expensive purchase, aren't they? But be sensible.
Yeah,
be sensible. Do you know, like the amount of people that's driving around in a car to make themselves feel good is, and make them feel important or feel successful. It's like, do you know, success is about, do you know, like money especially. Do you know, being wealthy is what the goal is, not to look wealthy. And I think that a lot of people's got that the wrong way around. They think having a nice car driving around with a bling is wealth rather than actually being wealthy themselves.
Yeah, certainly if I look back to when I first had my Porsche, back in the day when I had a 6-bed house, that I lived in by myself, so didn't need.
Yeah.
If I look at how much debt I had then, I am more wealthy now in a 3-bed, my BMW 1 Series.
Yeah, yeah. Are you happier?
Yes, definitely. There's no, I think as well, finances cause a huge amount of stress. People, there's a lot of financial anxiety.
This is interesting, Joe. I mean, how do you go through that transition of having a 6-bedroom house with a Porsche to having your 3-bedroom house with your 1 Series BMW? I mean, there's nothing wrong with either, but obviously there's a mindset shift that has to happen there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I don't think it happens overnight. It's like a lot of things. I mean, it took me, I would say it probably took me a good 5 years, but I mean, about 5 years was going to happen anyway, time was passing. And I think to me, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having the Porsche and the 6-bed house. And I think if I did go back to having them now, I would have them with less of finance on it. So it wasn't that tie-in, so you've got to earn X amount. And I actually quite like not having any tie-in. For me, that was the big thing of, I can have three beds and no mortgage. I went to six beds, I'd be having a mortgage. And to me, I just want that, that peace, because I always had it in my mind, like probably a little bit of law of attraction, no particular plan for it though. But when I got to 50, I wanted to be in semi-retirement mode.
Okay.
To me, just 51, this feels like almost semi-retirement, because I don't work all the time. Some days I don't come into this office.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to be writing books. I'm writing books. Need to get some of them finished, but I'm writing them. And it, to me, that is so, that feels right, because that's what I wanted to do. I don't need the pressure of earning more. Now, if I decided to bring some, say, one of the things that I'm going to be completing soon from a huge list of things that you're completing, you know, something really takes off and I'm suddenly getting loads more wealth. I'm not saying I wouldn't buy a bigger house or a newer car necessarily, but I would do it with being comfortable. So for me, this fits comfortable with the amount that I want to work.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. And I think that that's, I think that maybe this is what just happens naturally with age. I think we do get wiser to this as we get older as well, don't we? Yeah. But I think that, I think society, as you said earlier on, plays a huge role in what people think success is. And
they, with the Joneses, yeah.
Yeah, and they find themselves anchored in a job that they hate to get the income that they need to pay for a lifestyle that they don't really like, living in a house that they don't really want to be in, driving a car that they can't afford, and they're that deeply anchored into that debt. And that lifestyle that they can't do the thing that they love, and they might love painting rocks with pretty pictures on. And they might only be able to make £15,000 a year painting rocks with pretty pictures on, but they love every single day. And they can't do it because they're too deep and too anchored.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's part of this going through life on automatic. We don't stop and think about, until we do the personal development work, well, what is it that I really want? Yeah. What's my ideal life? What do I want to be doing? Who do I want to be spending my time with? And I think when you think of those terms, you might be surprised, like I was, that actually you don't need that flash lifestyle. Yeah,
true, very true. You need very little. Just spend time, experience things, not buy things. Yeah.
I mean, there's, and I always say to people, there's nothing wrong with wanting the wealthy things. But for me, I probably wouldn't go up to those things. Like, say, this time in life, I'd probably be thinking of... I think a thing that I want to add more now is travel, once we're allowed to travel to travel again.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Those kind of things, the experiences in life, are what's more important, yeah.
So, I mean, just coming back to the kind of mindset blocks then, the money blocks, the limiting beliefs and things, one of the things that you said a couple of times there was worthiness.
Yeah.
I mean, like, why is it that worthiness is such an issue for people?
I think it comes in many forms. I think for women, in particular, society has told us that from an early age, particularly in my age group, that it wasn't the done thing. Like I did mention earlier, when I first went to a conference for women in the accounting profession, now one of half a dozen women in the room out of 300. That's different now. And they've got, so we didn't have the norm. Our first, I think for me, the first role models that had for women in business were women trying to be like men in the corporate world. So, and it's then when you start to be something that you're not, it does make you question your worthiness.
Got you. And how do people then, Joe? Because that's a really good thing that you've just said then. How do people actually identify who they really are if they've been training to be somebody else for such a long time?
I think that's where it just a whole host of personal development stuff. You've really just got to be able to sit back and just giving yourself some time to explore. And it's not a sit down once and I'll journal for half an hour and I'll work it out. I think it does come over time, but you've just got to be able to keep taking yourself back, just stepping off the treadmill for a little while and think about, well, what is it that I want? Who do I want to be? And it is a journey that you need to go on. It's not like that instant fix, but...
And it's a hard question, isn't it, for people? Yeah. I mean, I see it all the time, and I suppose we're all guilty of it to some degree because we're all a work in progress. But yeah. I think that it's very easy for people to tell you what they don't want, but they find it very challenging to tell you what they do want.
Yeah, and again, I think that comes down to we've been told through society and what we've learned about money that it's not good to be showy. I mean, I don't know about you, but I got told things like, well, you can't always have what you want.
Yeah.
Which, all the time.
Yeah. Money don't grow on trees. Never gets. It's just a pipe dream. It's just a pipe dream, Jonathan. Do you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen to people like us.
Yeah, because you're working class, that doesn't happen. So, you know, we're not that kind of family. You know, we work for a living.
Sure. I know.
And you're told all these things, and then you believe them, and then that brings you down in worthiness. And you look at people that maybe are in your industry that are earning huge amounts of money, and you think, well, I'm not like them. How do you know? Because you don't know them.
Of course.
Yeah, just because, Yorkshire lasts for me, and it's like, well, that doesn't matter. I mean, I have travelled over the world and spoken to other people, and they are just the same. But we have this perception that we're the only ones like us. We need to stick with our local, what we're used to. Mm. Of course, we don't have to.
No.
It's about giving yourself permission to go out and explore what it is that you want.
Yes.
And get rid of the fear that's holding you back from then taking the action. Because, of course, you know, working out what you want to do in life, what you want to spend your time doing is great. But then you've got to make sure that you can go forward and do that. Because if not, what's the point?
Yeah, totally. So in terms of what you do with people, you help them to remove the fear.
Yeah.
You help them to get clear about what it is that they want.
Yeah.
And then do you help them with a plan or a pathway to take them to where
they... So once we've worked out how they think about money, and I do use a money profiling tool for that. So characteristics, how you think about money, what are your thought patterns, what are those stories you're bringing forward from your past, and sometimes it's from your parents' past and your grandparents' past, because it's all coming through. We work out, we change that all around, we put in some new ways of thinking, so getting rid of the old beliefs, and at that point you're then ready to create a plan for moving forward to how you tackle your finances.
Yeah, brilliant, fantastic. Joe, listen, I mean, this has been absolutely wonderful speaking with you today. I think this is a topic that I think more and more people need to be very much aware of. This, they need to spend more time on this as well. Is there any questions that I've not asked you that you think would be really valuable to the listeners or the watchers?
I think we've pretty much covered it all, because we've done the big topics, we've done the main limiting beliefs. Like you said earlier, do people fit into categories? Yes, they do, and they're the main ones. It might not show up for them exactly like I don't feel worthy or I have to work hard, but it will be some variation of things like that.
Of course.
And the other thing, the big thing, is fear. It comes up, it's part of our, it's what's created our limiting beliefs. So pretty much if you can get a handle on those things, then you've got money mindset pretty much covered.
Good. And what's the there's a fantastic acronym about fear, isn't there, which is false evidence appearing real. Or I often call it emotions, false emotions appearing real, because it is an emotion as well, isn't it? So
well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing about our unconscious mind. It takes something that may not be true, but it's what it believes to be true. We make that decision to have that belief, then it carries it forward as if it was actual fact.
Yeah, it makes it real.
It just does.
That's amazing. Joe, what's next? What's next for you? So you've got some books that you're working on. You've got a book out at the moment, have you?
Yeah, I've got Financial Fitness, Getting Smart About Your Money. So that's about creating a basic money game plan. So it's about, starts off with getting, start working on your mindset, get your goals together, what's your financial vision, make the plan for it.
Yeah.
I'm currently in editing stage with my publisher on a book, Moneyology.
Nice, like the name.
Thank you. That should be out later this year. Yeah, so that's what I'm working on at the moment, Moneyology, to get that finished.
Is the book, what's out, is that currently available on Amazon?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Bearing in mind, my target audience was for women. It's the same method for men. Just don't be put off by the pink cover.
I'll put a link in the description, so anyone that's interested in that book, we will put a link in there to find that on Amazon as well. Joe, where can people find out more about you?
Best place is via Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's Joe Outram, financial fitness instructor. Most things are on there, or I'm on LinkedIn under Joe Outram. They're the two places where I hang out the most.
Fantastic.
My clients hang out, so yeah.
Yeah. Joe, it's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you.